Oh my gosh, you have the Dallas board game?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was on Dallas.
Really?
Yeah. We missed our connecting flight, and we spent the entire day on Dallas. And then we spent a week on Hawaii. I was on heaven.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly. Nick and Weiss here with you. Ethan's busy being a new dad. We are here to talk about the Giants getting destroyed by the Cowboys and the rest of the season. But before we do that, got to take care of the housekeeping. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you get the podcast, available on all the major platforms. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow me at Nick Zeraris. Follow Ethan at EthanGSN. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Weiss, why is everybody so mad? Don't they know it's over already?
It's crazy. You know, I really don't know what people expected on Sunday. Week one, everyone's healthy. Vibes are great. Giants get absolutely clobbered. 40-0 at home. Fast forward to Sunday. They're 2-7. Injuries across the board, especially at quarterback, playing their third stringer, UDFA. A guy that, listen, all the love to Tommy DeVito, to his dad. It was great. I mean, happy that he got a start in an NFL game, but he's not an NFL quarterback, at least not right now. So I don't know what people expected, but Sunday played out exactly how I thought it was going to play out. It was going to be a clobbering, and that's exactly what it was. And prayers up to Tommy DeVito, but like I said, he's not an NFL quarterback. This team is obviously... turn the page on this season. It's still surprising that so many fans are still, you know, dialed in and wanting to, I don't know what they're trying to gain from this losing respectably. I don't know, but this team is headed toward a top pick. It's headed towards some important roster decisions. And I think that's what's important here. Not, you know, winning games or losing respectably in a lost season, because that's exactly what this is.
Hey, at least Dallas was nice enough to let us score this time. Week one, they poured it on for four straight quarters. And at halftime of this game, at least Dallas checked out. I mean, in the fourth quarter of week one, Dak was still in there with about 9-10 minutes to go. And they were very happy to continue running real offense. And then on Sunday at about halftime, they came out in the second half. They had a big lead. They started playing the no doubles defense. The Giants managed to score a couple touchdowns. That was good to see. But yeah, I do not understand. I understand why people are mad that they felt based off of last season, there should have been some form of progress, even if it wasn't in the direct form of wins and losses. And they need to channel that energy somewhere, because that's what it feels like. It feels like everybody knows that this is over and they're just trying to push that anger somewhere else. Like the media people covering the team getting mad at Dexter Lawrence, the fans getting mad at the team for the way they're handling the quarterback position. It just feels like everybody's so mad at each other because this season wasn't supposed to go this way that we're just looking for things to lash out at instead of just being reasonable. You cannot win NFL football games without an NFL quarterback. And there are backups you can win with in the NFL. There are plenty of backup quarterbacks who are solid players who can make things happen. Look at Josh Dobbs, comes to mind. Colt McCoy did it for a number of years. You can win with a backup. A third string, undrafted, free agent, rookie is not going to win you games.
Yeah, listen, if I would have told people, if I would have asked or told people after week one, listen, the next time you play Dallas, you're not going to have Darren Waller. You're not going to have Daniel Jones. You're not going to have Tyrod Taylor. You're going to have Saquon, who's still sort of on a bum ankle. And you're going to be playing Tommy DeVito. I mean, pretty much anyone would have said, okay, we're going to get clobbered. So, I think one of the most annoying things is it seems like every single week it's the same thing that we're talking about, right? Like, oh my God, we don't look competitive. We're getting blown out. Fire this, fire that. This person has to go. Like, this is a lost season. It is evident that the organization has turned the page. They winning, let me say this. Because people talk about tanking, and they, like when people talk about tanking, they immediately think about 76ers, Sam Hinkie, trust the process, right? Like, that's what they think about. But tanking is like, it can be defined many different ways. The way I look at it is the New York Giants are 2-7. They have lost their starting quarterback for the remainder of the season. We'll see what happens with their backup, but he's not coming back. Tyrod Taylor's not coming back anytime soon. We'll see when he comes back. The Giants, rather than going and looking at to see if there are better quarterback options available, they're just rolling with Tommy DeVito. That tells you that, like, winning, yes, they're not throwing games. What they're doing is they have just turned the page on the season. The winning is not the number one thing for them anymore. Now it's the evaluation process. It's seeing who is going to come out of this nightmare season and be a part of the solution, because that's what's important now, the long-term future of the Giants. So when I say that winning is not the top priority, I'm not knocking the organization. They're doing what's best for them. Don't hate the player, hate the game. The game says, if you have the worst record in the NFL, you get the higher draft pick. That's how it works. If it was the other way around, you know, the Giants would be acting very differently right now with how they handle the most important position. Tommy DeVito will not be starting. There are better options out there in free agency. So when I say winning is not the top priority, this is what I mean. It's not the top priority. It's not like we have to win this game. They're in evaluation mode. They're seeing what's they have some young players they want to, you know, develop and see what they can be, see how they handle these tough times, see if those guys check out. They're seeing how the demeanor, they're seeing if any leaders can emerge. I think Greg Olson summed it up best, where it's like for the Giants, it's about finding people that are going to be a part of the solution going forward. That's what the Giants are looking for. They're not going to win games. Tommy DeVito is going to be the starter until the bye week, and then we'll see what happens after that. They're not going to win a game. They know it. It is surreal that there's so many people that are, and not just fans, like when I see media members talking about the Giants don't look competitive. Well, yeah, they don't look competitive because they're starting their third string quarterback who probably shouldn't even be on an NFL team, let alone starting. What do people expect? The Giants have turned the page. Every week, we don't need to talk about Brian Daboll's job security or, you know, decisions that he makes. The Giants have turned the page on 2023. They're on to the future. They're on to 2024. And every single week, we don't need to have these same conversations about job security, about where you're losing games, about any of that. It's on to 2024.
Because there's nothing to be gained from having those conversations. We're just repeating ourselves over and over again. There's nothing constructive. There's no thought exercises. It is purely just a waste of time and trying to channel that energy into something. There's nothing productive to be said. They're going to keep losing. If they bring Tyrod back, maybe they can win one game. But it doesn't really matter if they win one game or not. In reality, they need to turn over 40 of the 53-man roster, 40 spots on this roster, which was something we talked about coming into the season. That in theory, by year three, year four of the Shane regime, they would have a roster that was mostly their guys, but they still need to churn some guys out. I don't think we'll see Andrew Thomas again this season. Frankly, they probably shouldn't bother trying to play Andrew Thomas again after he got hurt on Sunday. We probably won't see Evan Neal again.
Well, he came back into the game.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying there's nothing to be gained from Andrew Thomas going out there and taking a lick. You already paid him. Take care of him. Treat Dex. Treat the actual people who want to be here. Like Mike Tomlin always says, we don't want any hostages. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. But we are not worried about wins and losses. We are worried about the young guys on this team understanding that this is not what it's always going to be. You can be part of something better than this for guys like Deontay Banks, for guys like, I don't know, Michael McFadden, who really need these opportunities to play and just get the reps in. That's what this is about. Winning and losing doesn't matter. All of the proclamations, the coach, the owner's name getting brought up now in the stories for the first time in this season. The writers don't have anything else to say. The media people, all they can say is they keep losing badly. So they need to manufacture things to talk about because there's nothing else going on. There's nothing to be gained by talking about a team that's been outscored, 68 to 2, 68-17 against Dallas. There's nothing to be gained by talking about that. There just isn't. So we got to go to, well, that's, I don't know.
It's 89-17 Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing to be gained by talking about that. There isn't. So we got to go to, well, if they keep losing like this, John Mara might intervene. Okay, let John Mara intervene and show his ass and make him look like the stupidest person alive. The fan base already has a pretty low opinion of John Mara in regards to his football decisions. He fires, he asks them to fire Dable, or they get rid of Dable, and his hands are in the mix somewhere. Nobody will take the team seriously, and they'll alienate even more of the fan base. Because right now, there's still a lot of raw feelings, some anger, some, it wasn't supposed to be like this. But pretty soon, it will turn to apathy, and then people will start worrying about the draft, and it'll be, do you want Caleb? Do you want Drake? If you're third or fourth, do you want to trade up to go get one of those spots, or do you want to wait? That's the conversation. There's very little actual football to talk about in regards to
that. Yeah, I think also it didn't help that they were in sort of like the America's game of the week against the Cowboys, and it's the Cowboys. So, but let's talk about Dable for a second, because it's something that really, one of those things I also don't understand. And it's not really just fans like that are pushing this. There are people in the media that I simply, and I'm not going to name people, but you guys can see it for yourself, that are just talking about Dable's job security or Joe Shane's job security. I can't comprehend firing Brian Daboll or Joe Shane after 2 years. It would be the ultimate sign of a dysfunctional organization for them to fire either one of those two guys, no matter how bad it gets. But let's talk about Brian Daboll for a second, because all eyes seem to be on him. And you see the comparisons, the people comparing it to Ben McAdoo, people comparing it to Pat Shurmur and Joe Judge. And I really, you have all three of those, you know, coaches, and Brian Daboll the fourth are, it's a completely different situation. So if we go down history lane for a second, right? Ben McAdoo won 11 games his first year, lost in the playoff game. The year Ben McAdoo was hired, the team spent an insane amount of money in free agency to sort of go for it, right? They spent money. It was Eli Manning. They went for it. They had Odell Beckham. They really, really went for it that year. And the best they got was an 11-5 record and a loss in the playoff, right? The following year, it all fell apart for them. You know, typically that's what happens when you go all in and it doesn't work out. You come back the next year. You know, it's sort of, you know, sometimes, most of the time it doesn't work like that when you're big spenders. And the second year, you sort of don't get that same result from the guys that you paid big money for. That's typically what happens. Things fall apart. It fell apart, and then it really just became a shit show with the benching of Eli Manning. That's what got Ben McAdoo fired. Ben McAdoo was not getting fired because the team was an abomination. Ben McAdoo got fired because something that John Mara checked up, you know, signed off on and said, yes, go bench Eli Manning. And then he realized there was no way he could bring Ben McAdoo into MetLife Stadium in front of his fans in a lost season. He just couldn't do that, let alone bring him back for another year. And that's what fired him. Pat Shurmur was hired. And right off the bat, the first year was bad and the second year was bad. But all of us looked at it and said, it doesn't make sense to fire Pat Shurmur if you're going to keep the general manager, because after all, the general manager hired Pat Shurmur. It never made sense. And then also, it's because you drafted a rookie quarterback, remember, at the time, Daniel Jones. And we know that Pat Shurmur was involved in that, in the scouting of Daniel Jones and the development of Daniel Jones. So it's like, wait, you're going to get rid of Pat Shurmur when he helped draft this quarterback? Isn't, like, it doesn't make sense. Typically, when a coach drafts a young quarterback, you let that coach at least develop him for 2 years and then make your decision, right? That didn't make sense. Then Joe Judge. Talked himself out of a job, you know, it, and not just talking himself out of a job. Nobody wanted to work with Joe Judge, meaning no GM wanted to take a job where they had to inherit Joe Judge. They didn't want to do that. So you had John Mara again, had no choice, because he could simply not keep Joe Judge around because he couldn't get the best general manager in there. So It made sense to fire Joe Judge when maybe he didn't deserve to get fired. I don't know. But again, when you look at each one, each situation is different. Now take Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll is the reigning coach of the year. He exceeded expectations. What happened this year is a plethora of things. Yes, he hasn't had his best coaching game. he's had his moments where it's like, damn, what a horrible coaching decision that was. But for the most part, this is a guy that is now, you know, using his third string quarterback. Matt Barkley eventually is going to start if Tyrod Taylor doesn't come back. I don't see Tommy DeVito starting every game. So then you're talking about a fourth quarterback starting. There's injuries. There's been injuries throughout the offensive line. There's now injuries on defense. The receivers, Darren Waller is out. It's tough sledding. For them to then pull the plug off one bad year would, especially coming off what Brian Daboll accomplished in his first year, would be organizational malpractice. It would set the Giants back into that spiral of not having a head coach and a general manager on the same timeline, on the same page. It would be an abomination. Brian Daboll does not deserve to get fired. Is there stuff that Brian Daboll can do that will make you wonder if he should be the head coach next year? Yes, but those things are not there. It's not something that he can do on the field. It's,
yeah,
you know, if Brian Daboll, I don't know, runs over an old... runs over an old lady or does something like that embarrasses the organization. Yeah. Or if he talks himself out of a job, I mean, he would have to really go beyond what Joe Judge did that year. But other than that, it just doesn't make sense. Think about what your opinion was when Brian Daboll and Joe Shane were hired. What was your mindset about the direction of the organization, about what they needed to do? Number one was finding the right quarterback. Did they whiff on the Daniel Jones contract? Obviously they did, but they deserve the right to fix it. And I think that that's going to be the most important thing going forward. You hired Brian Daboll ultimately because you wanted him to develop the quarterback. Well, let him develop the quarterback. It didn't work with Daniel Jones. It's clear now that it peaked last year with him. The injuries have also taken a toll on Jones. He's not available right now. The team is destined for a high draft pick. To pull the plug on Brian Daboll now would be organizational malpractice. I'm not saying Brian Daboll, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that Brian Daboll is going to win a Super Bowl in New York, but I think Brian Daboll, the head coach, is more of what we saw last year than what we're seeing this year.
So it's interesting. The way I'm thinking about it is twofold. Number one, it's not only that Jones is dinged up and you're probably going to take a quarterback. It's that you are in one of the positions where you don't have to give up anything in addition. If you're picking second or third overall, you're going to get either your first or second choice at the position. If you really want to go up the one spot, all you got to do, a couple twos, maybe a two and a three, something like that, go up, move up your one spot, get your guy, and move it. And number two, you have to realize that Daboll, his calculus is different now because the team is not competitive. He's going to try and play defense and field position every single drive, because he knows his offense isn't going to do anything unless the game is in garbage time. He's not going to go for the close fourth downs. He's not going to send them out there on a fourth and goal down on the goal line. He'll take the 3 points every time because he knows he doesn't have an NFL offense right now. And the other point to that is, this is what I tell everybody, and this is especially true in college, because in college you couldn't know, coaches really hit that glass ceiling and then they really never really break through. If you're going to fire him, you need to have a coach that is better than him ready to go. If there is somebody out there you think is better than him, that's a different conversation. Just firing Brian Daboll because this season hasn't gone right, that's not a solution to the problem. There is not a coach in the NFL that could do anything with this roster right now. There is not a single person. You could have Andy Reid in here. You could have 2013 Bill Belichick in here. There is not a single coach in the league, probably in the league's history, that could do anything with this team, the state it's in right now. They do not have the talent to be competitive. Brian Daboll is doing his best to make chicken salad out of chicken shit, but there's only so much you can do when you don't have anything to do anything with. This is not an NFL quality team right now.
And one other thing is, how many coaches could have gotten what Brian Daboll got out of that last year team?
Yeah, that's the other point. Yeah, that was miraculous what he pulled off last year.
To get him to the divisional round with a bunch of guys that, you know, were either brought off the street or young players or guys that have been here for 4 years and haven't produced what they produced last year. How many coaches is anybody confident in that could go and get, you know, that what Brian Daboll got? And another thing is also, I want to take back to when he was hired. If I were to tell you in the first 2 years of Brian Daboll's coaching career as the Giants head coach, he would win one playoff game. would anybody sit there and say that he deserves to get fired after 2 years?
No, of course not. The thing is, this was supposed to happen last year. We keep hammering that point. But if the years were reversed, there would be no complaint here. And I understand it doesn't work like that in the actuality, but this is not a competitive football team. There is nothing the head coach can do right now to make this team competitive. When they play New England, okay, they'll be competitive in that game because New England is just as bad, if not worse. Other than that, they are going to be 10-point underdogs every single game the rest of the way. I am horrified to think what Christmas Day against the Eagles is going to look like. It is going to be a disaster. This is not an NFL caliber team. Stop expecting better results. There is nothing week to week that they're going to be able to change schematically, personnel wise, that's going to get you a dramatically different result than what's going on right now. They are not competitive.
Yeah, spot on. And then the people that harp on, well, there's signs of him losing the locker room. Well, who exactly is he losing? Like, people, oh, he's losing the, well, what players are he losing? Let's look at that.
Darius Slayton, Xavier McKinney. Okay, yeah, great.
So those two guys, because he's losing those two guys, his job is in jeopardy because he's losing Xavier McKinney. But we know what Xavier McKinney is as a player and what he's done in the past. Who I think is a very selfish player, and he's losing Darius Slayton because Darius Slayton was mad about something in a game. And we're going to point to those two things and say Brian Daboll is losing the locker room.
Ridiculous.
And I challenge anybody outside of the young guys, and I define young guys as guys in their first or second year. I challenge anyone to tell me outside of the young guys, three players or 3 to 5 players that actually you look at and say that guy matters to the future.
They have two guys.
There's only two. And those two are Andrew Thomas and the other one is Dexter Lawrence. Outside of that, there's nobody else in this roster that you look at and say, man, we can't lose that guy. You know, if that guy gets mad on the sideline, if that guy says something, then they're losing the locker room. Sometimes don't look at what's being lost. Look at who's doing the losing. And in this case, the guys that are the ones that are talking, those typically are the guys that you don't want around in the future. They're not part of the solution, as we talked about earlier. Dexter Lawrence, speaking of him.
Happy birthday, Dex.
Yeah, happy birthday, Dex. A lot of people were upset about Dexter Lawrence's decision to skip out on the media session. Now, I've heard some things about his excuse and, you know, what really happened, and I'm not going to go into details about it. Here's what I'll say, and I'm interested in your opinion on it too. Dexter Lawrence is obviously a leader in this team. He's obviously making a lot of money. He's one of the quote-unquote faces of this team. If you were to make a Mount Rushmore of the Giants, the 2023 Giants, Dexter Lawrence is on that Mount Rushmore.
He's number one. He's the number one spot. He's the best player on the team. Yeah. But it's not close.
Could be. Yeah, you could be right. I always thought it was Andrew Thomas, but Dexter Lawrence's availability might put him over AT, and that's not taking anything away from AT. But nonetheless, he's always been available. So here's my thought process on the media, on players talking to the media. Obviously, I know they're contractually obligated to talk. And if a guy skips out on a media session after he has a bad game or if he's a repeat offender, then I think, you know, criticism is warranted. If you're going to talk your talk and, you know, say things throughout the week and then Sunday comes around, you don't live up to your word and then you bail on the post-game media press conference, I think you deserve to get criticized. Dexter Lawrence has always been available to the media. Dexter Lawrence, throughout the week, you see him talking to the media at the end of games. He talks to the media. Dexter Lawrence, after Sunday, decided, I didn't want to talk. And his excuse was his excuse, which was it's his birthday, he wanted to see his family. Whether you think that's warranted or not, I'm not here to debate that with you. I have a tough time understanding all this criticism that's directed toward Dex.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I understand these people have jobs to do. What quote is Dexter Lawrence giving you about a 40-17 loss that's going to make or break your story?
And you know what the crazy part is, Nick? And I'll let you go. He talked the next morning.
Exactly. There is nothing to be gained. A game story only works if there is something that interesting that happened. If you lose 40-17, your game story is going through the motion. You highlight the key plays, you point out one or two people who had good games, bad games, etc., and you move along. There is nothing you could have gotten from Dexter Lawrence that was going to change that story or make it better. I don't think there's anything. What was he going to say that was so important that you had to have him right there? What question did you have? If you have an amazing question and you really need a Dexter Lawrence for your game story, okay. If you were just going to ask him, how's it feel? Are you getting frustrated? Is the defense improving? Is it getting worse? At some point, we got to ask what we want from our game story.
Do you know what they wanted to ask? Do you know what they wanted to ask? So I'll tell you what they wanted to ask.
Go ahead.
They wanted to ask Dexter Lawrence. Earlier in the week, Xavier McKinney made comments about lack of communication with the or whatever bullshit he said. Wink said, responded to it. You just gave up 600 yards on defense. What's your, as one of the leaders, that's what they wanted to ask him.
You're trying to get him to say something bad about a teammate, exactly, which he's not going to do.
If fans can pick up on that, right? Yeah. You and me can pick up on that. You don't think players don't realize that there's certain people, not all, certain people that are part of the media that are walking into that locker room where you've just been embarrassed and you're probably emotional and they're trying to get a quote out of you and they have bad intentions and you expect them to just play along?
I'm always going to empathize with the player, to be honest with you. Me too. We're media adjacent people doing this podcast. We understand those people have jobs to do as well, but there's nothing Dexter Lawrence was going to say that was going to make that story make your story better. It's just, you got to know when to use your judgment because it's a boy who cried wolf situation. You want to complain about this now one time in a lost game, in a lost season. Great. I really struggle to find empathy for that because it just doesn't matter.
And it does. And if it was a repeat offender.
Yeah. No,
or,
okay.
Or if Dex had said something in the middle of the week about, you know, Dallas or anything, and you want to see what his thoughts are after the results, and he skipped out, I'm all for it. But Dex is always available. All the media says how nice of a guy he is, and now all of a sudden we're spending a 3 days talking about why he didn't talk to the media, when in fact the day after the game, the man hopped on Zoom, and talked. It is utter nonsense. But again, like you said, lost season, this is what happens. People have these conversations and they look for ways to create headlines, and they created one with Dexter Lawrence not talking to the media.
Exactly. That it's so frustrating, man. I wish we could channel this energy into useful, productive things. Like a couple of years ago when they were an atrocity to the sport of football and you had people genuinely like, okay, we need to like stage a mutiny and get the general manager out of here. Great. But because we all still generally think Shane knows what he's doing, we're looking for somewhere to channel that energy. If they mess up this draft next spring, then we can start having conversations about whether or not this front office is right or not. They've had two draft classes. They've made the playoffs once. They've won one playoff game. This is their mulligan. If they have another
10-year playoff drought.
They ended
a 10-year playoff drought. I mean, it's crazy to me how all of a sudden, you know, when people were defending Dave Gettleman's atrocities for 4 years, are now raising their level of standard to no. We can't go 2-3 and, you know, 14 or 4 and whatever. And that's not the Giants. Really, that's not the Giants. When we were finishing in last place for 4 years, running through head coaches, having embarrassing moments from our coaches in the post-game media press conferences.
And our owner.
And the owner. Now we have standards? Really? Okay, please. Because they can't win with players that the previous failed regime brought in. Now we got to hold them accountable for that. Come on. Please, please, please. And here's the thing. It's not all fans. I think the majority of the Giant fan base understands, you know, you need more time.
Yeah.
The media's narrative control here, it is insane. And it's really, like, there's a lot of people in the media that I respect and I think do a good job. But man, that list is fucking shrinking. And I know people don't care about who I respect and all that, but I'm just saying, as somebody that I don't look at the media and it's like the media's always wrong, always wrong, always wrong. But damn, like, some of the shit that I'm seeing is it's really like, are you kidding me? Like, is this how desperate we've gotten? Come on.
There are interesting things to talk about if you really wanted to. If you really wanted to unpack some of this stuff and analyze year over year stuff where guys, how they played last year versus this year. Okay, I think we could do something interesting with that. But just dwelling on, well, is the coach safe? Are the coordinators safe? Is the GM safe? That's palace intrigue stuff that none of us are going to be able to contribute anything to the conversation on. We're not in those rooms. I don't know what's going on in John Mara's head. I don't know if Dable is safe or not. Based on logic, I would say yes. So that should really be the end of the conversation. Just use common sense. Common sense will save you a lot of time.
It will, yes. All right, Tankathon, my favorite part of the show these days.
Thank you, Kyler Murray.
It was a great weekend for the Giants. I know Thursday night people were a little bit upset, but I sort of looked at it as a win-win for the Giants at the moment. And Sunday morning was upset. But then 4 o'clock, like you said, Kyler Murray looks really good in his first game back from ACL injury, gets a win. Obviously the Giants, we know what happened to them, but the Giants now have the number 2 pick in the NFL draft. And I don't think they're going to give that up. They're either picking 2 or 1, in my opinion, because I don't see a lot of wins in their future. And the big thing with Carolina now is the strength of schedule. A lot of people also, you know, were replying to me, how do we have the tiebreaker with Arizona when we beat Arizona? The NFL draft process, the tiebreaker is based on strength of schedule. If you have the higher strength of schedule, the team with the lower strength of schedule gets the higher pick. So in this case, the Giants have a lower strength of schedule than Arizona. And because they have the same record, the Giants would then have the higher pick. So that's why the Giants are picking 2. Nick, where's your confidence level? How are you feeling? And as we look ahead, New England's on a bye week and then they get us. I have a tough time thinking Bill Belichick will not
be. It's Bill's last stand. This is Bill's last stand.
Will not be able to put together a game plan to make sure Tommy DeVito doesn't score a lot of points or enough points to win. Maybe a quarterback change there. We'll see. But Giants go to Washington this week. I think this is a little bit of a, you know, you're probably going to sweat this one out. I think the Giants will keep this game close. But I have a tough time seeing some wins unless, you know, Tyrod comes back. But if it's the Tommy DeVito show the rest of the way or Matt Barkley, I don't see a lot of wins in the Giants' future or a win for that matter.
The only game I think they'll have a real chance of winning is New England. They're playing Washington this week with Tommy DeVito. I know Washington has kind of packed it in, but their offense is good enough.
Well, their offense is good enough. Yeah, Washington has not packed it in. They play tough. I know they traded their pass rushers, but I watched them against Seattle the last week. They still believe they can make the playoffs. They're 4-6.
They've got guys on the offense. The offense has talent. If they had an offensive line, that team probably would be pretty competitive, in all honesty. Howell's showing you something. He's probably not great, but he's an NFL starting quarterback, which for Washington, that's real incremental progress.
He's playing himself into that, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's definitely bought himself another year as the starter. He's been good enough where it would be stupid to walk away from that. He's shown you flashes. But yeah, those are really the only two games in question for me because they've got the Eagles twice. Maybe the Rams game, if the Rams have packed it in at that point where like Stafford's not even playing, then maybe if Wentz is playing or if Stetson Bennett is playing, maybe the Giants can hang around in that game on New Year's Eve. But they with Tommy DeVito, you're not winning an NFL game. I just don't see a world where you can win with Tommy DeVito playing quarterback.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just not possible. That's why I think even if DeVito starts next week against New England, I still have a tough time seeing them beating New England. It'll be a 10-6, 13-7 type game, and I think New England will win. But Carolina, let's talk about Carolina for a second, because that's what stands in the way between the Giants and the number 1 pick. Carolina's remaining schedule, obviously, Carolina's an abomination. And Frank Wright, one and done.
They don't know what they want. That's Carolina's biggest issue.
David Tepper seems to be an owner that he's too heavily involved. Yes. And I think his problem is that he's too quick to pull the plug too on certain things. And if he pulls the plug on Frank Wright, I think that will really turn a lot of people away from his from coaching his team.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Bryce Young, I mean, the struggles, with rookie quarterbacks, the one thing is, especially someone that's picked number one overall, is like you see flashes. I haven't seen any flash from Bryce Young.
I haven't seen it either. He hasn't been put in a position to succeed. You get the qualifiers, the context of environment really matters when you're a young quarterback, especially when you're coming from a program like Alabama, where it's been pretty easy for you, frankly. I know they won one national title while he was there. They were competitive, they made the playoff. He's a good football player. He's a very good football player at the college level, but sometimes that just doesn't translate. I'm willing to give him a mulligan. We see this happen where you're in a bad environment. The offense isn't very conducive to your skill set. They don't really have a ton of weapons. Miles Sanders lost that job to Chuba Hubbard. Their best receiver is Adam Thielen. They don't really have any playmakers on that offense. So I'm willing to say, okay, the environment's not great. It's challenging. It's not a great situation for a young quarterback to be in. But yeah, he hasn't shown you a lot. And just firing the coach because you're dissatisfied with the situation, that's not getting to the root issue of your problem. If you want to fire Frank Reich, go ahead. It's your team. But you, again, are setting yourself up where, okay, I need to find another coach now. And you're probably going to lose people who would be willing to take this job if you fire someone after 1 year. What are you going to do to make Bryce Young better as opposed to looking for a scapegoat for why Bryce Young isn't playing how you thought he would?
The crazy thing is, if they fire Frank Wright, the next coach that they're getting has to understand that, has to be okay with the fact that David Tepper has a short temper and could fire you at any time or make drastic changes, is heavily involved. And oh, by the way, you have no choice but to work with Bryce Young and there's no draft capital there for you. That doesn't sound like much of a...
That's a tall order.
Job. Yeah, not a job that a lot of people would jump at. But they still have some games remaining. And I look at their schedule and I say to myself, they play in the worst division in the NFL. I think they can get at least two of these games. Look at their schedule. They got the Cowboys this week at home. We're agreeing they're going to lose that. But then look at this. Panthers, Bucks, Saints, Falcons, Packers, at the Jaguars, and then the Bucks again.
I think there's one win in there for them at least. I think they can beat Tampa. I think they can split with Tampa, and then they'll have a chance against Green Bay because Green Bay looks terrible. I think they have one game in there.
I honestly also like that Tennessee game.
I could see that. Tennessee
rookie,
hasn't
rookie
really
quarterback
shown
rookie quarterback. I could see one of those, and then hosting the Falcons, who I think Arthur Smith is going to get fired. I think so too. Yeah, I think he's going to get fired. And I think that team, I mean, they're going back and forth between quarterbacks. I could see Carolina getting that one at home too. So I think the luxury of playing in a terrible division could ultimately help Carolina, you know, will help Chicago with that top pick. But it could also help Carolina get some wins too, because that division is no good. Whereas the Giants, you know, looking at their schedule, obviously it is a light schedule, but they still got Philly twice. So you got Philly twice. You also got the Packers. And obviously the Commanders this week, who I don't think are a pushover. I'm telling you, I still believe that the number one pick is very, very much in play. And ESPN's analytical prediction thing has Carolina and the Giants pretty much neck and neck for that number one pick. So if you're a Giant fan, obviously, you know, you want the number one pick. You got to root for Bryce Young, man. Got to root for Bryce Young. I think Kyler Murray is going to win a couple more games with Arizona. And then that New England game next week, that's going to be the deciding factor in all this.
Completely agreed with you. That'll be the Caleb Williams Bowl.
Yeah, or Drake May Bowl, whatever it is. But yeah, that's where we are this week on Tankathon. After that, well, I think, you know, teams like Chicago, Green Bay, the Rams, Tennessee, they're sitting there with three wins. I don't think we need to worry about those teams yet. The majority of them also have a higher strength of schedule than the Giants too. But the Giants would have to need to win some games before we say, uh-oh, now we got to worry about Chicago or Green Bay or the Rams or Tennessee, because they're right there. So I think right now, Carolina, the Giants, and the New England Patriots, it's a three-team race, in my opinion, for that number one pick. And I like the Giants' chances as long as they continue to ride with Tommy Tanks DeVito.
Hey, man, he's getting NFL game checks. He gets to go home. He doesn't have to pay rent. He's living the dream right now.
Dude, his dad is, I mean,
hilarious.
Straight out of The Sopranos, man. I just, it's. If you would ask me, what does Tommy DeVito, what do you think Tommy DeVito's dad looks like? How he looks like is exactly how I envisioned. Big fan of Tommy DeVito's dad, man. Just seeing him. I'm happy with the DeVito family, man. Not a lot of people can say that their son started an NFL game. I think he should start the rest of the season.
It's a good story. It's cute, whatever word you want to use to describe it. We're on to the offseason in my brain. I'm worried about draft picks. I am worried about free agents. I'm worried about who wants to be on this team and who's going to be a hostage. That's really it.
Agree. Well, I think that's a wrap, right? We did it.
No, yeah, we did it.
We did it, yes.
Yeah. All right.
That's a pod. Do it. Yeah, we'll talk again after Sunday.
Oh, God. Yeah, we'll see you guys then.
Still 7 more games left. I think people got to take the emotions out of it, man. Peace.